the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Joining you Monday, September 23rd. It is the final off day of the 2019 season, and the Milwaukee Brewers are pretty much going to the playoffs after what looked like they were sort of dead in the water for a really good chunk of this season, late in the season, August. The September turnaround has been incredible. The Brewers won 6 of their 7 games last week at Miller Park. They sweep the Pirates out of town. They really could have won the 7th game against the Padres, but win 3 of 4. The Chicago Cubs have gone into free fall, losing 6 straight games at Wrigley Field, where they were unbeatable for most of the season. They lose 2 to the Reds, get swept by the Cardinals, and now the Brewers find themselves in comfortable playoff positioning. And not only are they in a comfortable spot, but they are tied with the Washington Nationals for the top spot in the wild card right now. Theoretically, if the season ended today, the Brewers would be hosting that game. They do have the tiebreaker for rights to host the wild card game with Washington. It's a little more complicated than that, but for the most part, the Brewers have done everything they possibly could. They can't be stopped. I mean, pretty much they're on a winning streak. They've won 15 of 17 games. What more can you say about what they've done? And they've done most of it without Christian Yelich, who has been obviously lost for the season. They've done most of it without starting pitchers that are traditional 6-7 inning guys. Most of these guys are going 4 and 5 innings. Brandon Woodruff is sort of returning into a role, but he's obviously limited. Has gone 2 innings in both of his starts. And the Brewers are finding a way. I can't explain it. You probably can't either. You're just enjoying the ride, as you should right now. The Milwaukee Brewers are absolutely steamrolling towards the 2019 National League Wild Card game, if not better. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel podcast. We'll be joined here shortly by Todd Rosiak, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Got some questions to ask him about some guys returning from injury. Keston Hira is playing the field. Brandon Woodruff, like we said, has been on the mound a couple times now. Brent Suter has been dominant in his return from injury. Guys like Mike Moustakas, Yasmani Grandal contributing as much as they can. Trent Grisham has been doing very well this week with Christian Yelich out. Some people have picked up the slack, so we have to talk about that. I don't know if there's any formula that can explain winning 15 out of 17 games. That's where the Brewers are at. Certainly taking care of business against two lesser teams. A little bit more challenging to go out on the road here in the final week of the season. 3 games against a Cincinnati team that's not terrible. That played just, I believe they're 1 game below .500 in September. They have a winning record at home. They've got Yenio Suarez, who's trying to win the home run title, chasing Pete Alonso. So there's things for the Reds to play for, and certainly they played for them at Wrigley Field when they took 2 of 3 against the Cubs early in this past week. So that's not easy. And then going to Colorado, a place where everybody seems to struggle on the pitching side of things, and Colorado is long out of this race, but they also have a winning record at home. They've got some quality players. Everyone knows Nolan Arenado, and even though the pitchers aren't going to be guys that should strike fear into the heart of the Brewers, that's a tough place to play, a tough place to finish. Their magic number is 3 to get a playoff spot. A combination of wins by the Brewers or losses by, right now, the Chicago Cubs will do the trick. Right now, I'm not convinced the Cubs can win. They need to win at least 4 of their final 6 games to have a chance, and I'm not convinced the Cubs can do that, even though they do play 3 against the Pirates, but then go to St. Louis. All those games are on the road as well. And Chris Bryant left Sunday's game with an injury. Anthony Rizzo has been incredible this week despite coming back from injury, but he's obviously a little hobbled. Javier Baez is limited, so I'm not sure what the Cubs have left in the tank. They are in free fall. Just a dreadful stretch. They're starting pitchers. Yu Darvish has been good, but he's lost both his starts last week. And John Lester, Jose Quintana, those guys just have not been able to hold their end of the bargain right now. And it's crazy to watch. I know a lot of Brewers fans want to see that happen. But again, I don't think anybody could have foreseen what the Cubs have gone through, just like I don't think anybody could have foreseen what the Brewers have gone through. The Brewers, though, still 3 games behind St. Louis, who did win that 4-game series, sweep that 4-game series at Wrigley. Going to be tough for the Brewers to catch the Cards. They have 3 games at Arizona, followed by the 3 at home against the Cubs. Seems unlikely that they would lose enough. Let's say the Brewers even swept the final 6 games, which is highly unlikely. The Cardinals could do no better than 3-3. 3-3 would force a 1-game playoff for the Central, just like last year. They would not. But if they went 4-2, there's nothing the Brewers would be able to do. That would be the division. The division would belong to the Cardinals. That's probably where we're headed. Probably going to see the Brewers in their first wild card game under this new format. But that is still in play, the possibility of winning the division. Much more tantalizing, though, to see them and Washington in a virtual tie for the top wild card spot, because who wouldn't want to see that wild card game on October 1st at Miller Park in Milwaukee? Washington has 8 games left. The Brewers have 6. Washington's got, they do not have a day off Monday like the Brewers do, and they have a doubleheader against Philadelphia also, I believe, on Tuesday. So they could theoretically win all their games, and the Brewers could do nothing to match them. But obviously you don't expect that to happen when a team has to cram 8 games into 7 days. That's quite the ask for any team. So I want to talk to Todd a little bit about the matchup with the Nationals, because it seems like that's where we're headed, a one-game playoff with Washington. They've got obviously a couple great frontline starters in Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg. Those are guys that the Brewers will have to keep an eye on, and will have to probably beat one of them to get into the main part of the playoffs, when they would be rewarded with a trip to LA to face the Dodgers. That would be an interesting storyline if they could get there. Let's talk to Todd Rosiak and figure out where things are going here with 1 week of baseball to play. Here he is, Todd Rosiak, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Todd, we've been on a wild ride with this team. They keep winning. They've put the Cubs in the rearview mirror. They're 4 games up with 6 games to play. It's kind of looking like it's a done deal at this point. The Brewers look very much headed toward a playoff spot, possibly the top wild card spot with the way they finished the week. These last two matchups, Cincinnati and Colorado, are kind of interesting. Cincinnati, you know, always gives them a tough matchup, being an intra-division opponent. Colorado is not a place anybody really wants to play. How do you look at these matchups? Do you feel like the Brewers still really do have some work to do, that they can't look past these couple teams? Cincinnati's got some good pitchers going in the series, for example. Or do you feel like the Brewers are probably in really good shape here? They just got to avoid getting hurt or anything in these last 6 games of the season.
I got to think that with the magic number being 3, they're pretty much in at this point, but you know, obviously they're not going to be shooting just for getting in. You want to try and at least get that home wild card. Would be a huge deal for them. We talked to Ryan Braun after the game about these matters, and you know, he said they're definitely not looking past either Cincinnati or Colorado. These are both teams that have given the Brewers problems in the past, and certainly games on the road in both of those ballparks can present problems. Both of them are very offensive friendly, and the Reds have guys that have given the Brewers problems in the past. Offensively, you've got AU will probably be good for a multi-homer game at some point here. And they've got to beat Homer Bailey. They've got to beat Sonny Gray and or Luis Castillo in 2 of the 3 games. And then you've got Colorado, which, obviously crazy ballpark there. They've got some talented players, and you have to think that they'd want to maybe get a little bit of revenge for the way the Brewers ended their season last year. So certainly a tough task at hand, both of those series, but the Brewers have shown no signs that they have not been listening to Craig Counsell's mantra, which is just take it a game at a time and focus on the task at hand and win the games in front of you. So should be 2 entertaining series, and you have to hope that if you're a Brewer fan, they can clinch a spot at least in Cincinnati, and then try to do some more damage in Colorado.
Curious your thoughts lately on Trent Grisham. He came out sort of hot out of the gate when the Brewers called him up shortly after the trade deadline, and then he sort of went into a lull, which I guess you'd kind of expect for a rookie. He has gotten a ton of playing time, left-handed bat, has flashed a little bit of power, and really had a good week, and it feels like maybe he's made a couple adjustments to the point that he's really a key contributor here. Last 13 games, he's 15 for 41, he's got an OPS over 1.1, and it seems like any maybe concerns we had over his game offensively have been allayed a little bit. What have you seen from Trent Grisham, and do you feel like he's sort of made some progress in the limited time we've seen him this year?
Yeah, I think he's probably performed better than anybody really could have expected for a kid who, is just getting his first taste of the big leagues. He certainly carries himself like a longtime major leaguer, not exactly the most verbose when he's talking to reporters. That doesn't mean he's a bad guy or anything, but just very quiet and kind of keeps to himself. Just doesn't seem, when you watch him, it just doesn't seem like any moment is too big. Handles himself well, keeps his head down, ears open, eyes open, mouth shut is what Craig Counsell likes to talk about with young players. And, certainly looks like he's prescribing to that. But, you know, he's a guy who's able to play all three outfield positions and play them well. He handles himself in the box well. You know, he can do different things. He's obviously got a little bit of pop on his bat, too. So he's a guy you can slot in pretty much anywhere up and down the lineup, and he'll fit. Slot anywhere in the outfield, and he'll fit. And just kind of a really versatile, interesting player, and a nice tool for Craig Counsell to have in his toolbox. And I would imagine he'll probably play a pretty big role here over the next week and whatever else comes in the postseason.
This week we've seen Keston Hiura return to the field, although I would say I would classify him still as somewhat limited. He's not playing full games if they can help it. He's not running all out if he doesn't need to. And we saw, again, over the weekend Saturday, defensively, and that was the case when he didn't have a hamstring issue, defensively he's still a liability. But there's no question you can't take his bat out of the lineup, especially a right-handed bat. The Brewers just don't have many healthy ones to go with right now. I'd be, I guess, a little worried about Keston Hira's defense in a one-run game, like a wild card game, and his inability to really just let loose. How limited do you feel like he is? Do you feel like he's pretty close to just being able to run as he would normally, or is he just going to be half speed just for the rest of the way here?
I don't know. That's a good question. And I think the more time that goes by, probably the better off he's going to be with his hamstring and the more confident he's going to be in it. The defensive thing is you know, something to keep an eye on. And today, late in the game, he was subbed out for Corey Spangenberg for defensive purposes. And, you know, maybe he can just hit home runs and trot around the bases, and then you don't have to worry about the sprinting and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just another injury, another guy who's nursing an injury at a key point in the season. You know, we've seen Lorenzo Cain hobbling around out there and doing pretty well regardless. So, you know, this time of year, guys are doing all they can to stay healthy and stay on the field and contribute in some way. And that's another young guy right there who's getting his first taste of, you know, really meaningful, important baseball. So, you know, you have to figure he's going to do all he can to stay on the field for as long as he can.
Brandon Woodruff also returning this week. A couple two-inning stints we've seen from him so far with Gio Gonzalez, sort of the piggybacking model a little bit that you see in the minor leagues where starters will be paired up. It obviously worked great on Sunday when they took a perfect game into the seventh inning. So clearly things have worked with those two guys so far. But do you think that the next step for Woodruff is to maybe try and go this last week a four-inning outing? Or is the emphasis with him just, you know, just to avoid any further damage with that oblique injury, just let him go these two, maybe three-inning stints? Don't plan on him ever having a full starter's capacity if they do get to the NLDS or NLCS, if everything keeps coming together. How do you see the future for Brandon Woodruff?
Yeah, well, the health of Brandon Woodruff is the number one thing, number one priority, and the Brewers are not going to waver on that. So, you know, he talked today after the game about this is very early spring training for him as far as stretching out and, you know, getting his arm, you know, basically up for these longer stints. And, you know, he's really, based on what he did the last couple outings, his first couple outings, 38, 40 pitches, that's only, you know, basically your second spring training start. So, you know, realistically speaking, next time out, maybe three innings, 45, maybe 50 pitches, and then go from there. You know, the longer the Brewers play, you could probably stretch him out a little bit more. But, you know, they're going to listen to him. He had a little bit of soreness in his arm after his first start, and talked a little bit about the fatigue he had after the first couple innings today. So, you know, certainly the Brewers are going to listen to that and err on the side of caution, because this is a guy, obviously, that, you know, figures to be the cornerstone of whatever rotation they're going to put together in the offseason for 2020. So, you know, just the fact that he's back and he's pitching obviously is a huge boost for this staff. And they're not going to do anything to really kind of rock the boat with him. So take what you can get and bullpen it as much as you can, I guess.
Yeah, speaking of that bullpen, Brent Suter has been a revelation. I mean, he's just been unstoppable since he came back from Tommy John surgery. He's a multiple inning guy, two inning stints where he's, you know, I think he's allowed like six hits or something in 13 innings. He's just been so good. We've talked about him before, but we could talk about him in terms of 2020 or maybe even still 2019. I mean, is that a guy who could go longer? Could he be starting games even theoretically? Probably, I guess probably not this year, but they've got to be looking at him as a guy who could be this type of weapon down the road. Even, I mean, maybe they don't think about putting him back in the rotation. That's a guy who could be pretty lethal coming out of the bullpen in multiple inning stints. He really fits what they've been trying to do with their bullpenning model. This is just, I don't know. I mean, I'm as blown away by Brent Suter as anybody in this September run that they've had.
JR, he's an outgetter. You should know that by now.
Yes, there's no such thing as starters or relievers. It's just outgetters. But you know what? The model is working. It's totally working.
Yeah, no, I tried to pin down Craig Counsell on, you know, what they see in the future for Suter, and that was the answer I got. You should know better than ask. He's an outgetter. I mean, the more versatile guy is, multi-inning guys that you have on the team, the better. And this is a guy, obviously, that's done both and done well at both. So I think, they're certainly going to, like Woodruff, they're going to be very cognizant and cautious of the fact that, you know, he's coming off a surgery. Woodruff isn't coming off a surgery, but he's coming off a long absence here because of the oblique. You know, Suter with the Tommy John, they're going to come into spring training next year and I think really monitor his workload still and make sure that he's really all the way back from that before they start, you know, really leaning on him heavily. But, you know, who can quibble with what he's done to this point? It's really been amazing. I mean, he just gets the ball and goes like old Suter and just is not walking anybody. So, and what's interesting too is Chase Anderson talked about after Friday night's game, how he's, he's taking a page out of Suter's book and trying to work fast like him. And it worked in his stint, six innings the other night against the Pirates. So, just another weapon, another guy that the Brewers are fortunate to have there and somebody that above all else, I think everybody can root for. Just a tremendous individual, first and foremost, and, great attitude, great guy to have in the clubhouse and one-of-a-kind kind of guy.
We have a lot to talk about still about 2019, but I find myself, I know we've sort of discussed how this team has been shaped to some degree for this September run, the way the 40-man roster was built, the way that they employ just about everybody on it who's healthy to sort of use as many guys in the bullpen as you can, multiple inning stints. Essentially, it's like a line change. You got three pitchers one night, another three another night. They're capable of, with the depth they have, they're capable of kind of doing whatever they want and allowing starters to go four innings or less pretty much. I think about it a little bit in terms of what they're going to do next year, because the roster flexibility will shrink a little bit. It'll be 28-man rosters in the month of September, 26-man rosters for the rest of the season, so at least that expands a little bit. I don't know how much that's going to affect what they're doing per se, because they do seem to have a lot of guys who are capable of going multiple innings, but I do know that they're taking advantage of the situation that will not be available to them next year. Do you think that they'll even have to start building it even in the off season right away, where they maybe do things a little bit differently because they can't think about September as this kind of personal playground where they can really make up ground? I know they don't expect to make up this much, but still, September is operating in a certain way that they've been looking forward to for some time. They won't have that next year. How do you think anything changes, or is it just way too early to talk about this stuff?
There's so many spots on this team that are kind of up in the air right now. But to me, if you know, from the outside looking in, I think if anything, this is gonna put more emphasis on they need to really bolster their starting pitching going into the offseason. They really need guys that they can count on that have done it over the long haul, and it's gonna cost money. You know, if you're looking to add free agent guys, it's gonna cost a considerable amount of money. If you're gonna trade, you know, what kind of trade bait do you have? So to me, if you're able to bolster that, isn't as big a factor. It can still be a strength, you know, starting with Josh Hader. You know, you figure Corey Knebel will be back at that point. And then you've got other guys who, are back in the mix as well. Look at Drew Pomeranz. We were talking about him today. Talk about a guy that's made himself some money with the way he's pitched since he joined the team. Is that a guy that, you know, the Brewers look to bring back on a multi-year deal? Who knows? The price tag may be too high, but, you still got some young guys that you're going to be looking at for the rotation as a possibility. I don't think Freddie Peralta or Corbin Burns can be forgotten about at this point. You know, you've got Chase Anderson, who's got a very team-friendly option. I certainly think you bring him back, and he can be in the mix as one of those swing guys. So you've got options, but to me, I think they've really got to look at, you know, adding at least one and maybe two established guys or young and up-and-coming kind of guys who they can hand the ball to. 30 times a game and know they're going to 30 times a season, I should say, and know they're going to get some production out of them.
probably this has happened too fast to think about the playoff roster, and it's going to be different. My understanding, the wild card game, the roster you have there does not impact the roster for the division series, so they probably will leave some starting pitchers off of that roster and load up on the relievers, so it'll be really similar to what they have now. Anybody that you think might be a surprise addition or a guy who maybe is in jeopardy of not making the playoff roster, you know, maybe somebody who's nursing an injury, or there's going to be an interesting decision between whether it's Spangenberg or Perez, maybe it's both. The outfield situation is, there's, you know, a lot of possibilities there. Have you had a chance to look at that and think about that, and anything jump out at you about what construction the Brewers will have to consider?
Yeah, I really haven't, but the one that would have, there's actually two guys that, number one would be Spangenberg, like you mentioned. I just have to think that for everything he brings to the table, the way he's played in September, I would think that he would kind of be the no-brainer if you're going to go with the one utility guy. And I was talking with Tom about this during the game today. I mean, Jay Jackson is going to be part of this postseason roster, and if they make it past the wild card game, you got to think he's going to be in the mix for, you know, NLDS and maybe beyond if they make it that far. But what a story he's been, a guy that, you know, was DFA'd during this early in the season and just really a non-factor, and all of a sudden here he's pitching in the third inning today in a huge game for the Brewers, and a guy that's getting high leverage, very important situations handed to him now out of the bullpen, and all he just does is throw slider after slider after slider. So, you know, that's a guy to me that, you know, who would have predicted this postseason charge, first of all, a few months ago. Number two, a guy like Jay Jackson factoring in at the back end of the bullpen for the Brewers, who would have ever factored that in as well. So just, you know, that it's just a couple of very interesting storylines in what has been a very interesting 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever you want to say here. It's been very interesting to chronicle and to watch.
Perfect time to note that I've got an interview with Jay Jackson coming up right after we're done chatting. So it is a good time to talk to him. Super interesting story. Guy that pitched in Japan for a few years and was a minor league guy or a minors deal guy who came over, got DFA'd early in the season. It looked like he was going to be, you know, good chance he isn't even still with the Brewers. And yet here he is, like you said, crushing batters with sliders and playing a prominent role. If the Brewers do face the Washington Nationals, and it looks like we're headed to that reality, it could be at Miller Park, could be in Washington. If the two teams tie, it'll be in Miller Park. So technically, as we go into the week, that's how the situation would look if the season ended today. Of course, the Nationals have two more games to play, so they kind of have an edge. They could theoretically win out and keep the Brewers at bay there. But what is your, I guess, like, anything jump to mind in terms of scouting report if we're looking at Washington? Max Scherzer's probably going to throw. He's been hittable since he came back from injury, though he's still a guy who racks up a ton of strikeouts. The Brewers have struggled with him in the past, as many people have. Do you get the sense that, I mean, maybe they go to Strasburg in that situation? I don't even know, but how do you sort of match up these two teams?
I mean, I would expect Scherzer to be the guy. It's a guy that's got a great history against the Brewers, strikes out a ton, as you noted, a ton of big game experience for them. And, you know, go ride him as long as you can, basically. You know, the Brewers, I think, you know, obviously a contact, you try to make as much contact as you can against a guy like that. And I haven't really looked at his numbers too closely this season. I know he's been hurt for a while, or he had been hurt for a while, but if you can at least stay in the game against Scherzer and get him out after six innings, you know, rack his pitch count up a little bit. I know the Nationals bullpen has been pretty much a disaster from everything that I've read and that I've seen. I don't know if it's gotten better here down the stretch, but you want to try to get get the bullpen into the game and try to make some hay against those guys. So offensively, they've got some nice pieces. Anthony Rendon should be a top three MVP candidate. Trey Turner, you've got Soto in the outfield. So, they've certainly got some guys, Eaton, that can play and that can hit and everything. So, the team's played a pretty entertaining series in Washington in mid late August too, as everybody remembers. So, for all the marbles, one game, it should be a very entertaining game if that's the way it winds up shaking out.
Oh man, who could forget that 15-14 game that had so many twists and turns, and that ends up being a pretty important win because now the Brewers have the season series 4-2. They have the tiebreaker thus, so if, again, if they end up tied, that game will be at Miller Park on October 1st. It's going to be a very exciting sprint to the finish here. Todd, thanks for joining us. We said we'd have no idea what we'd be talking about last week, and that is certainly true. We had no idea they were going to win 6 of 7 and be firmly in the playoff mix at this point. Another week goes by. This could, I assume we'll be looking forward to a wild card game, but who knows?
We'll be talking about the Brewers winning the Central Division next week. Mark my words.
This is exactly what happened last year, and that is absolutely how it transpired. So, yes, that's probably likely. It's going to be a one-game playoff, let's be honest. Everyone's going to go to St. Louis, and they'll be trying this whole thing again. Todd, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, JR, take care.
Thanks to Todd. Didn't mention this at the outset, but have this chat lined up with Jay Jackson, reliever for the Brewers, who is a really interesting career, basically. He spent the last few seasons in Japan and signed with the Brewers on a minor league deal coming into the season. He's been very effective for them in September. He's been a very valuable member of this bullpen, this 40-man bullpen staff that's been helping the Brewers just rack up the wins. He was on the team in April. He got designated for assignment in May, which means he could have been claimed off waivers, could have gone somewhere else. It wasn't clear that he would remain in the organization, but he did. And his second time around with the Brewers was just okay. And at some point he came back up, and he's been really, really valuable. A guy who can, like a lot of these relievers, go multiple innings. He seems to have a really good command of his slider right now, and is somebody that the Brewers are able to rely on. Don't know if he's going to make one of the postseason rosters, either the wild card or the division series roster, probably the wild card roster with the team having the luxury of not keeping as many starting pitchers on that team. So we'll be interested to see, because he's been a really good weapon. A guy, again, who came from Japan and has an interesting story. His girlfriend and son, his girlfriend's from Japan, and his son as well is, I believe, living back home still in Japan, although he's come to visit him in the States a couple times. So here's an interesting chat with this guy, the right-handed reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers, Jay Jackson. My guest is Brewers relief pitcher Jay Jackson. Jay's been up and down with the Brewers a couple times this year, and actually I'll start with that because you were here in April and then designated for assignment actually for May. It's kind of up in the air when a player gets DFA'd what comes next. So what was that period of time like for you? Was it a difficult time for you? I don't know.
No, it wasn't really difficult. You know these things happen in baseball, so it caught me by surprise, but not really, since the night before it happened, the team had a long game, so you figure it's going to be somebody. You hope it's not yourself, but it ended up being me. And so you just kind of roll with the flow. My family was in town at the time, so I got to enjoy some extra time with them.
All right.
So
silver lining.
It was good that I got to spend some time with my son and my wife, so it was nice.
But you don't know what comes next at that point, if the team's going to move on from you or keep you. Like, was there some consternation for those, I don't know, 4 days?
Well, it was kind of like, it was up in the air because another team could pick me up.
Yeah.
But
looking back, it's kind of amazing nobody did, really.
somebody could pick me up, but nobody did. So I knew I was going to go back to San Antonio. It was just, you go back to work after that.
Okay.
As long as you get a chance to wear a jersey, just look at it that way.
Obviously, things have been quite a bit better, numbers-wise anyway, since you've been back. Was there an adjustment? I mean, you were always so good at AAA, so I don't know if there was anything changed between the first stint and this stint. Just slider command seems like it's just a lot better than it was then, or how would you describe it?
It's just, getting more opportunities, being able to throw on almost a more consistent basis.
For sure.
You get to see more hitters, see how big league hitters are seeing your stuff, and you get to kind of, work on stuff and adjust as the games go on, as your pitches are thrown, as you throw more, get used to the balls, the atmosphere,
right.
The situations you're in. You get more comfortable and everything comes out and becomes a little bit more easier.
So if Wikipedia is to be trusted, your full name is Randy J. Jackson. You're coming up as American Idol is a big thing. I don't know if that's why you ended up going with your middle name, or if there's probably not. But
it's actually, Jay's not my middle name. It's just the name that my mom gave me.
Oh,
when
wow,
I was
okay.
Born. I'm actually Randy Jackson Jr.
Nice, okay.
My dad's
perfect.
My And my dad's Randy Jackson Sr. And my son's actually Randy Jackson the third now. So.
Awesome. So no running at all from the American Idol connection, Randy Jackson, American Idol.
Never goes away.
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
It's awesome, though.
You made your debut with the Padres, right?
Yeah,
Padres. 2015. So give me some sense of what that experience was like for you. I mean, was it nerve-wracking? Was it the Padres are out of the race at that point in 2015? But what was that like for you?
It wasn't nerve-wracking. You know, I had had a pretty good year at AAA that year again. And, you know, September rolls around, our team was actually in the playoffs. So nobody knew what was going to happen. They had a couple guys get called up right at September 1st, and I wasn't one of them. So, sure. You know, you kind of just, again, you go back to work and you see what happens, see what's going to happen. And then after the season finished the next day, you know, I got a call from the VP, and he was like, you know, how long has it been since, you know, you've been playing minor baseball? Like,
yeah.
I think it's been 8 years. And he's like, you know, you've earned a shot to be a big leaguer. So,
cool.
And after that, the first debut day was nerve-wracking. But after that, you just kind of settle in, and it becomes baseball again.
Yeah. You were with a couple other organizations after that, including Milwaukee. Did that lay the groundwork at all for coming back to the Brewers later? Were there any connections made, or was it totally separate?
There's some connections made there. I knew the guys at AAA because they've been there for so long. I already had a connection with them. I had a familiarity with them already, so that definitely helped a lot. And, you know, once it came that they were interested in me, you know, I was like, you know, I like the organization. I like the guys that are there. I saw Moustakas was there. I see Lorenzo's here. I've played against those guys my whole career pretty much.
Yeah.
So I know them a little bit. Jeremy Jeffries, you know, all the guys. I've played against them and hung out with them before, so it was a good fit. And, you know, we just kind of vibed and it worked out.
Kind of skipping the step of you going to Japan, which is sort of the non-traditional part of your career. You pitched with Hiroshima. Great numbers for the 2 years you were over there. What brought you there? Was it just your agent got you connected there? Like, how did you end up out there? And obviously, I'll ask about just, you know, adapting to what it was like over there.
I just got called up, and, you know, the Padres, we were still with them.
Yeah.
And my agent calls me. I was actually in Mexico playing winter ball.
Oh, wow, okay.
And he gives me a call. He's actually asked me if I was still interested in going. I was like, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I like going and playing everywhere. So, and he's like, okay, well, there's an opportunity for you to go. If the Padres let you go, then, you know, you're going to have a chance. I was like, all right, fine. That's awesome. So I got the opportunity to go, spend 3 great years over there.
Yeah.
And came back.
Were you a traveler when you were younger? Was that something that appealed to you? No. Or?
I really wasn't. I didn't travel much. The first I ever traveled was I traveled to Las Vegas for the National Basketball Championship tournament, like AAU tournament, when I was like 15 or something like that.
But Japan's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. But other than that, it was just there in Florida really for baseball tournaments and stuff of that nature. But never anywhere too far. So as I've gotten older and started playing baseball, I've traveled everywhere. So
yeah, of course,
it's been a great experience.
And how was adapting to the baseball part of it, but the culture part of it too over there as well?
It was fun for me. Like I think that I can adapt to anything, or I try to anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, people will take notice that you try, so they kind of help you a little bit more.
Plus, sure,
I was able to connect with some other foreigners right when I got there and make some friends and, you know, not feel too left out in the dark a lot. So that helped out a lot.
Yeah.
But as far as the culture, I love the culture there. My son's actually half Japanese. So,
really? There you go. Okay.
I loved it a lot, obviously.
That's one way. Yeah, it's okay.
But, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a great time. The people there are awesome. They're nice. They're friendly. They take care of each other.
Yeah.
The place is clean. It's the cleanest place I've ever seen in my life. Everything was great over there.
Were you a celebrity like Thames was in Korea?
I was getting there.
Yeah.
I was pretty close. I would say I was pretty close. In the culture over there, I guess sometimes you can say, I guess they didn't like it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I wasn't a native guy. But, you know, it was fun. I had a great time. I was becoming kind of a little celebrity. I guess I have my own logo now because of it.
Really? Excellent. Did you get to design it, or somebody made that for you?
Somebody made it for me, and then they told me I could have it, and then I trademarked it.
Nice.
So now I have my own logo.
You have your own logo. Are there other guys on this team that have that? feel like maybe there somebody should, in there.
There's probably a couple guys that do.
That's crazy. I gotta go seek
lucky,
that out.
I just got lucky enough to do it. It was fun to do.
I read about your sisters a little bit because you played college ball at Furman pretty close to home, that they got to watch you a lot. Jasmine, Kayana, and Kayana is younger, but Jasmine has Down syndrome, so can you kind of just tell me about their role in your life and the fact that they got to watch you play so much baseball had to be pretty cool.
Oh, it was amazing. You know, the fact that I got offered to be able to play close to home and play at a high level close to home, so my family could watch me play. That was one of the motivating factors of me going to Furman. And it has been my whole life is my family. You know, they're there for me at all times. They've been a big inspiration to me, especially Jazz.
Yeah.
She's happy every day no matter what. Yeah. She's been that way since I can remember. And so I try to live my life that way. Yeah. I try to live my life as happy as I can every day and be as positive as I can every day, because I know there could be a lot worse things I could be doing, a lot worse situations I could be in, you know. And
right.
I'm happy that she can be happy every day and I should be able to be happy every day too. So that's how I try to do everything and go about my business every day. And I try to bring people with me to be happy and try to make them be as happy and positive as possible too.
Last question. Furman's mascot is the Paladins.
Yes.
What do you tell people when they ask, what in the world is a freaking Paladin?
I tell them it's a medieval knight.
All right. I guess that is what it is.
It is. It's a medieval Christian warrior knight, I guess you could say.
Got it.
Back in the day. So it's kind of funny because nobody's ever known like what about
right.
it.
I assumed it was a bird when I first heard it.
I never knew. And then like the first year, like the first day you get there, you get to see all the stuff. I'm like, what actually is the Paladin?
Yes.
Because I didn't, like, even with it being so close to my house and my family's house in South Carolina,
no,
I never went to football games or anything or basketball games. So I never really saw the mascot.
Right.
So once I went there, I was like, oh, all right.
That's what it is. All right. Well, good luck the rest of the year. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Thank
you. All right. That's it. We're done for the week. We've got 6 games of baseball left Tuesday through Thursday. The Brewers will be in Cincinnati. And then over the weekend in Colorado in that thin mountain air, possibly trying to clinch a playoff spot. They could have a playoff spot locked up before they get to Colorado, which would not be a bad situation. Will require a couple things to go right. Again, their magic number is 3. So let's say they sweep Cincinnati, that's 3. Or they win 2 and the Cubs lose 1. Or they win 1 and the Cubs lose 2. That's 3. That's all you need. You need that combination. And then you are guaranteed a trip to the playoffs. And I mean, even better than that, their magic number for at least some sort of playoff is 2. You know, in the unlikely scenario that the Cubs come back to tie the Brewers, they would be in a spot where they'd be able to host that playoff tiebreaker for the second wild card. That would require a lot of things to go wrong. Brewers fans at this point don't want that. There was a time where that sounded like an amazing accomplishment, and the Brewers now in really nice position. 4 games ahead of the Chicago Cubs, 4.5 ahead of the New York Mets, or a little bit of an afterthought at this point, but still maybe a team to keep an eye on if things go south a little bit. Brewers, of course, would rather finish ahead or tied with Washington to host that wild card game, and even better if they could catch St. Louis and force a 1-game playoff for the NL Central or somehow win it outright. Don't see that happening, but I didn't see any of this happening, so who's to say? Everything's on the table. Hopefully you've enjoyed this week of Brewers baseball. It was a great week for Wisconsin sports with the Badgers and Packers also winning, and let's do it again next week, shall we? We've got some big games on the docket for all these sports teams. Let's roll into that October 1st wildcard game with a head of steam. I'm sure it's going to be a fun ride. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Todd Rosiak, Jay Jackson. We will chat with you again next week. See you soon.